Today's program was brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country? For more information, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of, welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host is Sophie Schlesinger.
Hey, everybody.
We are joined in studio today by John Bonanno of Aratom Dairy.
Hello.
And also by our special guest, Owen Rappaport, who is our curd word guy and summer intern. So we're gonna do our curd word segment again later in the show, so you can keep up our cheese vocab and knowledge.
Yes,
you're a cheesemaker now, Aratom Dairy.
I am a cheesemaker.
You've been a cheesemaker for a while, but are currently up at Aratom Dairy in Westchester County.
Yeah.
You worked with us at Saxelby Cheesemongers for a while.
That was the beginning.
Which was great fun. That was the beginning. And take us even further back. Where did you start, and how the heck did you end up on a goat dairy in Westchester?
So I graduated from college, and I got into the filmmaking business.
Mm-hmm.
Which I worked in for 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
And I kind of decided that was not for me. Moved back to the city and spent a couple of years tutoring SAT stuff for the SAT, random other standardized tests, which was a good way to basically delay making a decision about what I wanted to do with my life.
Uh-huh.
And also, like, keep up on your bio and chem and math.
A little bit. Math. I mean, math is... I remember when I first started, I was like, I couldn't do any of my the stuff that I from high school, but it all came back. And it was great because it allowed me to basically live in New York and kind of explore all kinds of different things, which eventually became agriculture.
Of course, the logical topic in New York City.
I became interested in agriculture because I grew up in Western Mass, surrounded by dairy farms, and I kind of wanted to get back to that a little bit as much as I could. I took a class up at Hawthorne Valley Farm with Rachel Schneider, who runs the education department up in Hawthorne Valley. And while I was taking that class, I was also dating a French woman, who I'm still dating, and became interested in cheese. And started listening to Cutting the Curd.
It all comes full circle.
It does come full circle. I wasn't sure if you were aware of the fact that my cheese career is...
I remember we met at Beer Table for a beer and cheese event that we did there with Springbrook Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe you did mention that, but I forgot because my brain is a sieve.
I would listen to the show coming back from Hawthorne Valley. It's a long drive to Ghent. On the way back, I'd listen to the show, and I kept hearing people do this show who I really, really dug. And I was like, man, it sounds like a really cool industry to be a part of. You know, I remember listening to Chris Gray's episode and Michael Lee's episode, Angela Miller's episode. And during Angela Miller's episode, she mentioned Caroline Smilek and Peter Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
Who worked at the Hawthorne Valley Farm. And I thought, kismet. it's the cheese world is now following me. So I ended up getting in touch with Consider Bardwell and working for 6 months or so with the goats up there. And then when I was done with that little internship, I contacted you. I was actually sitting in a cheesemaking class with Peter Dixon, who was at Consider Bardwell at the time. But I didn't get a lot of... of a cheese house experience. I consider Bardo. It was mostly tending to baby goats and stuff like that.
Not such a bad
raising,
gig.
Raising yeah. some of the meat goats that ended up
as part of Goat-tober.
Goat-tober, exactly.
Goat-tober is a an initiative that we I kind of told my husband Patrick, who runs a meat company, that he should sell goats because on dairy farms there's nothing to do with the male goats, but exactly. people should eat them because they're tasty.
Exactly. So I think I helped basically raise the first one of the first big herds for Goat-tober.
Awesome.
I turned a lot of
circles.
Yeah, there's it's so a kind of a disgusting right number of circles.
Yeah, yeah. This right was here. A Venn diagram. It would be
so,
a mess.
So
yeah.
during the during Peter Dixon's cheese making course, when I probably should have been paying attention to what exactly coagulation is, because I still can't really tell you. I know kind of what it is.
Owen can tell you the curd word
perfect,
guy.
Yeah,
I'll do my best.
So during the class, I looked down and I noticed that Saxby Cheesemongers was looking for a new monger, and I fired off my resume from Putney, Vermont, where I was hanging out with Peter. And one thing led to another, and I know 2 weeks later I was a cheesemonger at Saxby Cheesemongers.
That's great.
But the whole time I had my eye on making cheese. I don't know really why, because I've now discovered it's not an easy road. but I got an internship at Rainbow Ridge Farm, which is in northern Westchester in Bedford Hills. And so while I was SAT tutoring and working at Saxby Cheesemongers, I was also going up to Rainbow Ridge a couple times a week and helping with Lisa Schwartz on the farm there, making her cheeses and periodically getting to hang out with the goats.
And then that kind of led to your current endeavor.
Yep.
It didn't kind of lead to. It did lead to
that
your current
it.
Endeavor. So can you tell us about the transition from
so,
how do you go from working from Lisa to have your own dairy
so
up
basically
at the farm?
Her husband got a gig in Beijing running Goldman Sachs in Asia, just a little job.
Just a small company.
Yeah.
It's like being
it's a
startup. It's like being a cheesemaker.
Exactly.
You know?
So Mark is spending a lot of time in Beijing, and Lisa decided and realized that there was no way she was going to be able to run a dairy when she was traveling back and forth to Beijing. And so she basically got rid of, but sold to a dairy upstate, two-thirds of the goats, but kept the big milkers. So I was kind of shocked to find 2 weeks into the season that I had a lot more milk than I had expected. Not a lot more, but definitely 20% more than I was expecting, because the numbers should have meant that I had much less milk.
So that means that she's got good breeding, good genetics.
Well, she kept the good ones. So she let go of the stragglers.
Yeah,
And she kept the good ones. So I only had 14 goats.
Mm-hmm.
But they're given over a gallon, 1.1 gallons per goat per day, which is a really,
that's a lot.
It's like 9 pounds a day per goat, which is, wow. it's good numbers.
What's the average?
I don't know. I should know.
I remember
Margo and Alex at Consider Bardwell battling to get their Sonnens up because Sonnen goats, of course, are not known for their the amount that they produce.
Sonnen goats are those pretty white ones.
They're gorgeous.
For anybody
they're
who
beautiful.
Doesn't know.
Pretty yeah. white ones? No.
Sonnen?
Sonnens? I mean, isn't that what the Consider Bardwell has? I thought they had the Sonnens. I thought it's like the dark, the ones like the face.
Oh man, we'll have to look into it. I feel like when I worked in France, we had Sonnen goats, and they were white goats.
Oh,
but
really? Maybe I'm getting confused. But anyways, she is Alpine goats, and those 14 goats are doing a lot of work. They're doing a good job for me.
So just move up there and decide to become a cheesemaker, having taken one short course with Peter Dixon. How you
well,
were developing your skills
yes.
over
I mean,
the
I was
years?
I was with Lisa for a year and a half. Something like that.
Okay.
Year and a half, making cheese with her. And so she basically said to me, I'm going to keep the 14 best goats. And if you want it, you can pay me rent. You can have it. So, that's kind of what I've always wanted to do. And so I kind of had to jump at the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
And I realized pretty quickly that since she had buyers of her products already, that I might as well just keep making her stuff. And she was totally fine with that. She just wanted to make sure that she had, it had a different name, so no one who ate it and thought, man, this is crap. No one thought it, Lisa Schwartz was responsible for that crap.
Right.
As it turns
out, not crap. Yeah, so tell us about the cheeses that you are making this season, your inaugural year. So
and the name, too.
The names, Cinder and Clover. The name story is interesting. I didn't quite enjoy the process of coming up with the names either for the creamery.
Well, I remember that you told me that they're horse names.
Yes,
horse
they're horses' names.
Just translate into cheese names.
That
effortlessly,
is true.
Which makes
when I
no
was
sense,
when I was it doesn't make any sense. I was thinking of what I should name the creamery. I didn't want it to be anything to do with Bedford necessarily. I didn't want it to be the Bedford Hills Creamery, because if I had moved to northern New Jersey or Pennsylvania or Maine or something like that, it would be a silly to call it the Bedford Hills Creamery, Bedford Hills Dairy. So I wanted it to be unique, and I found some Native American who had sold off his land 200 years ago, something like that, to one of the first settlers of Bedford. So I liked the name Aratome. And that was a process in and of itself. It took me a long time. And I kept looking on the internet, names, and I found that horse names.
Horsenames.com,
exactly. I don't even know what the website would be where you would find horse names, but there were pages and pages and pages and pages of horse names. And they all make good cheese names.
It reminds me, like, they tell you what your porn star name would be, like the horse name becoming the cheese name.
Yeah, Yoav Perry, we'll maybe get to in the second half of the show. We were just on the way up to the farm the other day, and he said that Major Deegan would be a great porn name.
They're going to say a great cheese name. I was like, no. I wouldn't want to eat Major
porn
Deegan.
Major Deegan.
No, thank you. Yeah. That's funny.
So where was I? Horse name. So Cinder is an ash-covered, they're both fresh goat cheeses. You know, fresh goat cheese is what Lisa made, partly because it's the easiest thing to turn over. You know, you can make fresh goat cheese and it's ready. It's ready in days. In fact, I dropped off cheese today that was made 2 days ago. I need about 2 days from like when I put it out on the table to actually getting it to the stores. And it's a really quick turnaround with a fresh cheese. And it's popular. You know, fresh cheese sells.
Especially at this time of the year. I feel like people really, want something that's lighter.
Yep.
Exactly. A little tangier, not too like stinky or aged.
So, and I thought, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I went with the cheeses that Lisa made, and she just said, just change the name, and then they're yours. So I did that. So Cinder is ash covered fresh cheese, and Clover, if you can recognize the horse in that name, Clover and Cinder. Cinder actually worked on a couple levels because obviously the ash, so it wasn't a completely random. Clover was somewhat random, but also goats, if they're on pasture, eat clover. So I thought there was some kind of connection there too.
And the little flowers have a little white tint to them, which is
exactly. So those are the two cheeses that I make. I also make feta for the market. You guys haven't eaten any of the feta yet. I just don't have the milk to do everything I would like to do.
I think it's better probably to start out with fewer cheeses. I feel like it's a pretty common pitfall of cheesemakers to start trying to do 5, 6, 10 different varieties.
But I'll tell you why they do that. They do that for the markets.
The farmer's market.
The farmer's market, exactly. So you quickly find that when you go to the farmer's market for the first time, you know, 5 out of 10 people don't want fresh goat cheese. They want something else. They want hard cheese. They want brie. They want not what you're selling, and so I think
go to frickin' Stu Leonard's. No, I'm just kidding. Or whatever's up there.
It's not that far from there, is it?
Yeah.
So I can see why people would do that, and that's why I do the feta, because feta is also a quick turnaround, easy to make, relatively, and it sells well at markets, especially in the summertime. I do some feta, and I just do the curd when it's not molded becomes chèvre that you can cook with. And Lisa had a lot of success with the chèvre, like mixing it with cranberries and other stuff. I sell it to Blue Hill at Stone Barns, and they cook with it. And that's pretty much the only people that buy the chèvre.
And Korykova.
Oh, that's right.
At ABV.
How can I not mention Korykova?
Yeah. Corey's a great guy. And anyone who hasn't been to ABV has got to go. And Earl's Beer and Cheese. Now. And Do Loco. They're opening a donut place.
Yes.
Maybe they'll put goat cheese in a donut.
That I can definitely see that.
Crogo no donut.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they going to do a cronut?
Oh, hopefully not.
He's not going to follow in anyone's footsteps.
No, hopefully yeah, not.
He's going to blaze a new path.
Well, I think we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to keep talking with John, talk about urban cheesemaking and all sorts of stuff.
And our curd word. Stay tuned.
Today's program was brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 160 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
And we are back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. You can check out this and all the other shows on the network at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host is Sophie Schlesinger. Today we have John Bonanno of Aratome Dairy in the studio with us, and we also have Owen Rappaport, who is our curd word guy. We're going to lead off the second segment here with our curd word of the week. Go for it.
All right. Thank you, Ann. So our curd word of the week is abomasum, which is also known as the maw, the rennet bag, or the reed tripe. And it's actually the fourth and final stomach compartment in ruminants, which are animals which chew their own cud. And so what's important about the abomasum for cheesemakers is that it secretes rennet, which is used, of course, when you're trying to make the cheese coagulate. So
Wow. That's
what abomasum is.
The phrase awesome. Rennet bag is hilarious.
The rennet bag. That's awesome.
And did you say maw also?
Yeah, maw.
Those are amazing.
Is that M-A-W, maw?
Exactly, yes.
That's great. So we don't have to cover maw in a future episode.
Yeah.
We just did it. We got like a twofer. Well, thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Owen.
My pleasure.
Speaking of rennet,
yes.
Interestingly enough, Saxelby Cheesemongers is the only people that have the animal rennet version of the cinder.
Yes.
Oh.
That?
It was a very interesting thing. I mean, people have told me over the many years that I've sold cheese that the type of rennet used, people are like, oh, it doesn't really make that big of a difference. There are some diehards who only want to use animal-based rennet, but a lot of people say, oh, Peter Dixon was actually one of them, because
yep.
he said he wouldn't use vegetable-based rennet at Consider Bardwell when
yep.
he was the cheesemaker there until he could do some test batches to make sure that they were up to his standards, and he thought it didn't change the flavor or the consistency.
Mm-hmm.
But when we tasted test batches of your cheese, John, we really liked, I definitely noticed a difference.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
we did a blind tasting. It was
yeah.
just like version A, B, and C.
Yeah.
And I like the animal rennet versions better.
Yeah. Every now and then I'll have a bite of one of them and I can't remember which one I grabbed. And it's noticeable. You can tell right away which one it is.
Yeah.
So Saxby Cheesemongers for the animal rennet version of the cinder and other places.
Well, thank you, John. That's really,
other places
that's awesome.
Have the animal rennet.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we were going to talk about, I think, an article that just
yep.
came out. Sophie's going to chat about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So there was a really great article actually written by Matt Spiegler, who was a guest on our show, who is a programmer by day, cheesemaker by night, has a wonderful cheese blog called Cheese Notes, and wrote an article for Modern Farmer, just profiling some of the cheesemakers here in the city, a bunch of who have been on our show. One was John.
Yep.
And
the theme of the article was urban cheesemakers?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that was Urban Cheesemakers. Yeah. But I think, obviously, no, you know, it's not a name that you should attach to anyone in particular. I mean, a specific name. I make cheese in Westchester, Northern Westchester County. It's not really very urban.
But
I started
people,
making cheese in the city.
Yeah, obviously. I feel like people started making cheese in the city.
Right,
yeah.
Right, exactly. And yeah, the reason that I think that the article is interesting, and I'm not, you know, I don't know if people realize this so much, is that we're all friends. All of the people mentioned in the article and the writer, Matt, are all friends. And we kind of started, we hung out at Local 61 for the first time like 2 years ago. And
it's been the best.
And they've been so helpful in the last, you know, 2 years to have people to kind of riff off of. And especially now, where I don't have time to think for myself, you know, I'm in the single cheesemaker mode right now, where I'm just constantly making cheese.
Like single mother, single cheesemaker.
Single cheesemaker. Yeah, by myself, making cheese all the time. I don't have time to think. So what I can do is I can send an email out to Yoav or to Matt or to Elena or to Yos, and if I have any questions, and I get immediate response back from them. And so to have that kind of support is crucial, because
I think that's a reoccurring theme we're seeing. Last week we were talking with Dean Summer in Wisconsin about the Cheese Masters program, and he was saying the same thing. You know, for these people who've been making cheese for decades, they now have this little network, and they can just call each other up on the phone and troubleshoot.
Yeah, I mean, Yoav came up a couple of days ago, and we made some spruce-binded goat cheese, and I never would have had the energy or the time to come up with a recipe and do that. And you know, because I'm constantly pretty much on autopilot these days. But Yoav, you know, has more energy than I do, basically spurred me on. So we made a batch, and we'll see what it tastes like in a couple weeks.
And we actually have a caller on the line, so we're going to go ahead and put her through.
Hello? Hello, caller.
Hi there.
Identify yourself, caller.
this is Veronica.
Veronica Pedraza of Meadowwood Farms. And also a former guest on Cutting the Curd, former cheesemonger at Saxony Cheesemongers. Crazy. All right. So I'm going to contextualize this a little bit. So this article by Matt Spiegler came out about urban cheesemakers, basically profiling people who have made cheese at some point in the city, kind of on a small scale. And Veronica had some comments about that as a cheesemaker. So we're going to just have a little lively debate for the last couple minutes about urban cheesemaking. So Veronica, what was your beef with urban cheesemaking?
Oh, well, it wasn't just, well, I don't know if I can speak for Tia.
Tia. Better not.
Essentially thought that, you know, milk is essentially grass. And so in an urban environment, you lack grass. So you lack milk.
But the people who made that milk have grass, right? And so, you know, the milk that comes to us isn't like gravel fed milk from Brooklyn or anything. It's like grass fed from somewhere.
I'm sure that you guys will, if anyone's going to revolutionize gravel fed milk.
We can do it.
It'll be Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Have you ever traveled through like Morocco and seen those goats on up in the mountains? I don't know what they must be eating gravel, because I don't see any grass inside. No, but I would agree that if you want, you know, most cheesemakers who are in the business of making cheese and have a business with employees, have to have pasture to put their goats. I think it's an economic decision. I mean, it's not even, you can argue about whether or not it has anything to do with the flavor of the milk and that kind of thing. But animals have to be on pasture if a cheese maker wants to have a sustainable business. I think there's just no other way to do it. So I would agree. But I think most of the cheesemakers profiled in the article are buying milk that is from grass-fed animals. You know, most of the cheesemakers and the urban cheesemakers are buying it from probably from cow shares programs, kind of like below the radar from grass-fed animals in Pennsylvania and stuff like that.
Well, and there's a distinction to be made too. I mean, I think that Matt Spiegler was profiling, more like hobbyist cheesemakers,
right,
rather than, which of course now you're not, you know, people who make cheese just kind of as like a fun,
right,
you know, thing to do for their friends and for themselves in their apartments, you know, jerry rigging refrigerators,
right,
and whatever
exactly
it takes. You know, that's, uh,
that stuff, that's totally legit. Because there's like craft brewing, which, you know, is, or home brewing, I should say.
There's home roasting of coffee beans, I think, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. But it's never going to take the place of, you know, the pros.
Yeah, definitely not. And I feel, but I feel like even still, there are larger scale urban cheesemakers. I feel like, you know, Salvatore Brooklyn's a good example. Yeah. You know,
doesn't Neil's Yard do something? Or
I was going to say Beecher's.
Beecher's
is really the urban cheesemaker, if there was one.
But, you know, and you know, you can have the debate about whether or not people should be trucking in giant milk trucks into the city. That's definitely a debate I would be willing to have.
Yeah, well,
I'm not sure I would come down as one that would be for that. But if you can afford to do it, again, I think it's an economic thing. I just don't think it's affordable for most people, most industries.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. We are almost out of time. Any closing thoughts for us, Veronica, on cheese making, goat dairies, John's cheese? You got to try John's cheese. It's really good.
I have tried Ledyard.
I'd love to try John's cheese. Maybe we can do a cheese trade, John.
Yes.
I'll send you some cheese and you'll send me some cheese.
That sounds like the plan. I'm a big Ledyard fan.
To make it, it's a lifestyle thing. You can't have it both ways. You can't live in the city and be a cheesemaker. It's just not, even if you're just making as a hobby.
You gotta
just have to suck it up. There are a lot of things I don't like about living in the country, but I like making cheese more. So.
Very interesting. All right, well, we will leave it with that. We're out of time for today's show, but thank you so much, John, for being with us. Thank you, Owen, for our curd word. Thanks, Veronica, for the phone call, and we will be back next week with another episode.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.